Yeah, Decisions. That's out of National. And we got a lot of decisions to make all the time. And you got to make the right decision. You don't want to keep making the wrong decision because that's going to screw everything up. Okay? We got a packed show for you today. I'm really looking forward to the show. At the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with Jen Marlowe, writer, documentary filmmaker, founder of Donkey Saddle Projects, communications associate for Just Vision, and co-producer of their film Nyla and the Uprising. And she's going to be talking with us about the Palestinian Marathon, which she recently ran in, and running for the right to thrive, as well as just what the hell is going on in the West Bank, what's happening to the Palestinian people, the actual real moves by the Israelis and the U.S. imperialists to erase the Palestinian people from the face of the planet. So we'll be talking with Jen about all of that. And opening the show up, I'm really pleased to have my first guest. And some of you will remember Michelle Chai, who's here, who's been here often. And she is here with Andy Z. And some of you will remember Andy Z. He was just on the show,
Three weeks ago.
Yeah, there you go. And we're here to talk about what's been going on. You know, both of them have been active, and Andy's here in this city in order to be part of and be building he's part of the National Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. And it's something that's really aimed at changing the whole setup in what we have today, in what's existing in the country today, and actually in the long run, what's existing in the world. But this is much more, this is a question of actually digging into what's happening and changing things so that a movement for revolution can really take root and blossom and really do what needs to be done. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
Michelle, did I already say welcome? It's good to talk to you guys. Let's just jump into this. First, now, Andy, I got to say this to you because you were involved in this in the beginning. When you guys, I'm sitting in here and I was reading and I was looking and I was reading the thing and I was saying, okay, there was the BEB. And it was this whole question of what is the BEB? What the hell is it? What the hell is it? What the hell is it? Nobody's going to tell me what it is. He gets up, he tells us, and there were people, I know there were people all over the place wondering, what the hell is it? And people were guessing at it. It was actually really interesting to see the creativity people had in trying to figure out what was going to happen. But it was revealed in terms of what it meant. And you can say that, but say it cleanly.
Yeah, I've gotten practiced at doing my self-bleeping. So we announced this here down at City Hall, and it was something we did all around the country. BEB stands for Bourgeois Electoral BS. And it came along with a poster that had pictures of everyone from Donald Trump and Mike Pence to most of the Democratic candidates and people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders. And so it was basically an exposure of the fact that these people have no real answers to the depth of the problems that humanity faces and people in this country face. So that's what the BEB was.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's something that, I mean, it really did. It really stoked up a lot of things in people's minds and in the society. And I thought it was actually very important. But now you come back with, and you have something that you recently wrote about called the 526. So, okay. What the hell is that now?
All right. 526. Everybody knows what that is. Well, look, the 526 is somebody on the tour, the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour, which actually has full title is You Think You're Woke, But You're Sleepwalking Through a Nightmare. This system can't be reformed. We need an actual revolution. And we're going out around the country in a grand experiment over a year doing something that's never been really been done, organizing a national movement, trying to organize thousands of people right now to prepare for and to get organized for a fundamental change in this country with impact all around the world for an actual revolution. So the 526 refers to what we call in the tour five stops, two choices, and six points of attention for the revolution. And the five stops really illustrate what the basis for a revolution is. These are five things that people care very deeply about. Maybe Michelle wants to just run them down a little bit.
Yeah. So the five stops are the Stop the Genocidal Persecution, Mass Incarceration, Police Brutality, and Murder of Black and Brown People. Stop the Patriarchal Degradation, Dehumanization, and Subjugation of All Women Everywhere, and All Oppression Based on Gender and Sexual Orientation. Stop the Wars of Empire, Armies of Occupation, and Crimes Against Humanity. Stop the Demonization, Criminalization, and Deportation of Immigrants and the Militarization of the Border, and Stop Capitalism, Imperialism from Destroying Our Planet.
Yeah, so if you think about these five things, when you go out with these, and Michelle has some stories from being out in South Central with this, and we've also been out in elite universities in Los Angeles at UCLA, that these are five things that people care very deeply about. Yet at the same time, none of these things can fundamentally be solved under this system. And this is a challenge that to your listeners, we get Colin, but also more generally, they should look at this. You actually can't stop any of these things. It doesn't say mitigate this, make it a little bit less, try and get a few people out of the jam of deportation. It means actually stop this. And when you really approach something like the environment, it really can't be stopped. Anybody, if you look at the entirety of it, you're not going to carbon tax your way out of the degradation and destruction of the environment, which could potentially be existential for humanity. Humanity, the species, may not survive if this continues as it's been. So that poses two choices for people. First, leave the world the way it is. See what happens and see it go on the path of destruction, taking lives today and crushing spirits all over the planet. Or make revolution. That's the hard road. That's the historic thing we're setting out to do. A revolution to overthrow this system and bring about a radically new society on the road to emancipate all of humanity. And then that poses, well, what is that revolution for? How do you organize people into it? What are the principles of that revolution? What methods does it carry out? And what goals does it have? And that gets us to 6 points of attention, which are the attention, 6 points of attention for the revolution clubs, how they're organized, what people live by today and fight for in the future.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask Michelle. Michelle, you actually, when Andy's talking about the 6 points of attention, what I understand it is a concentration. It's a concentration of the principles, methods, and goals of the revolution. And in terms of you being from the Revolution Club, this is actually pretty central to what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell people about that? What are the 6 points of attention?
Yeah, so I'm going to just go ahead and read them for people that are listening. So our 6 points of attention for the revolution, these are principles that the Revolution Club upholds, lives by, and fights for. So one is we base ourselves on and strive to represent the highest interests of humanity, revolution and communism. We do not tolerate using the revolution for personal gain. Two, we fight for a world where all the chains are broken. Women, men, and differently gendered people are equals and comrades. We do not tolerate physically or verbally abusing women or treating them as sexual objects, nor do we tolerate insults or jokes about people's gender or sexual orientation. Three, we fight for a world without borders and for equality among different peoples, cultures, and languages. We do not tolerate insults, jokes, or derogatory names about a person's race, nationality, or language. Four, we stand with the most oppressed and never lose sight of their potential to emancipate humanity, nor of our responsibility to lead them to do that. We work to win people of all backgrounds to take part in the revolution and do not tolerate revenge among the people. Five, we search for and fight for the truth, no matter how unpopular, even as we listen to and learn from the observations, insights, and criticisms of others. Six, we are going for an actual overthrow of this system and a whole better way beyond the destructive, vicious conflicts of today between the people. Because we are serious, at this stage we do not initiate violence and we oppose all violence against the people and among the people.
Well, and I know Andy started to speak to this, but maybe you could add on to this. Let's talk about a little bit. You know, you have these 6 points of attention and, you know, you read them and people are probably thinking about it. But there's also probably a question there of, OK, well, what actually, why do you have the points of attention? What's their purpose?
Yeah, well, it is like this. You look at the way that Andy started with the five stops, right? And the way that people are just forced to live in a society where, even to, you know, to highlight number two, right, the way that men and women are the relations between people, and the way that, you know, people are pinned against each other, and people, you know, it's just very, very vicious and very messed up, the relations that people are so used to. And here you have these points of attention that when people are confronted with something very different, they start thinking about even what they're forced to think is a normal, right? And, you know, and this is part of, we can't actually implement these points of attention under this society because you have a system that wouldn't let us do that, right? So in order to get there, we actually do need to make a revolution, and people can begin to live by these today as they are, you know, learning more about it, as they are, you know, questioning everything that they've believed to be the normal or what they've, you know, what they've were have been forced to accept their whole lives, and actually see that there is even, you know, number six that gets to, we are going for an actual overthrow of the system. And because we are serious at this stage, we do not initiate violence, right? We're getting ready for the time when millions can go all out and overthrow this system. And right now is not that time. And because we are serious and we take ourselves seriously, that, you know, we don't go and do that, right? And at the same time, we, you know, we oppose the violence against the people and among the people. And so, you know, I just think this is, you know, it's just something so different than what's out there in society.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Michelle Chide from the Los Angeles Revolution Club and Andy Z, spokesperson for Revolution Books in New York City and co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and advocate for the new communism developed by Bob Avakian. And we're talking about the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour, which Andy is part of. And I guess is Michelle part of it too now?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And you need to pay attention to this because it's really something that's both unique and much, much needed. Now, Andy, did you have anything you wanted to add to what Michelle was saying?
Well, I think it'd be interesting for people to listen to how this gets posed very sharply among the people. And, you know, since we came to L.A., obviously wasn't our plan that the hip-hop rapper and entrepreneur Nipsey Hussle was going to be murdered and by somebody, you know, we don't know all the facts of that yet, which posed a very painful situation for people in terms of how many of our youth and young people are killing each other for nothing, really for nothing. It's a very painful situation. But the tour has been out there at the memorial at Staples Center, and then out in the neighborhood around where his store was located. And this is posed very sharply the way that Michelle just spoke of, you know, we're going for an actual revolution because we have this killing has to stop. We don't, all this revenge has to stop. And I think there are some examples that Michelle has from actually being out in the hood. I've been out there a bit too, but she's been out talking to people. And in each case, we're posing to people, well, we're either going to live this way with all that that means and the horror it means and the tears and the pain, all of this is going to go on, or there's another road. It's not an easy road, but it's the only road towards liberation. So I don't know, maybe you could tell some of the people some of the things that people have said back to us, you know, and this is very challenging to people because people read these points of attention and they go like, right. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm down with that. But then when you actually think about it, what does it mean to actually live without constantly seeking revenge when sets are set against each other? And it's no, I just wanted, before Michelle speaks, because we don't have anybody with us here who's been working on the campuses, you're out at places like UCLA, people have the same sort of clawing against each other, but it's in the realm of careers, positions, academic appointments, all this kind of stuff, and a lot of focusing on me and what I'm going to get and what I have to actually claw my way to get, and not what would be in the interests of humanity. So even knowledge is privatized under this society.
Yeah, very important. Michelle.
Yeah, I just want to start by reading this. We have a quote from somebody that actually read the points of attention and actually took some flyers. And I'm just going to read this quote. He says, "What really resonated with me is that we fight for and search for the truth no matter how unpopular." And here he's quoting point of attention number four, right? Oh, number five, I'm sorry, number five. And he's saying, even as we listen to the observations and insights of others, right? People sometimes don't like to hear the truth. And people gangbanging don't like to hear the truth or want to accept it. Because when they are in what they are in, they can't. But we have to say it. We need the truth for this to stop. And he says, I took 10 flyers to get out to some students in the community to get the word out because I'm fighting for what you guys are fighting for. I want to see a change. And this is, you know, somebody who read one of these points of attention or these points of attention and really felt it, right? And even what he says around the truth and what people from, you know, from wherever they are in their thinking, they have to confront this, right? You know, so there's examples like those. And then there is, you know, really heartbreaking examples where, you know, somebody that I talked to, he was very appreciative of, you know, the points of attention. And then he said something that was really heartbreaking and I really want people to think about, right? He says, he pointed to Nipsey Hussle, right? And he said, that's what's in my future. And my future is already written and there's nothing that we can do about it, right? You know, at the same time as he was engaging with these points of attention and actually appreciate it. But that's how, you know, I really want people to think about, because this is, you know, the way that people are just trained to accept these horrors, right? And then there is, you know, more really good example of like, you know, somebody who, you know, really, really liked these points of attention and actually took some out to, you know, to get out to people, right? At the same time as he's going on the revcom.us website, watching the clips from Bob Avakian and talking about how this system has no future for the youth and the revolution does, right? And he's, you know, and he has a lot of questions. And every time we're out there, he comes out and he's talking to us and getting into these questions and taking more materials and getting them out because he sees the importance of, you know, of people really having this opportunity to look at there is an alternative and we can actually do something about this, right? And he actually made this comment about it, what would happen if we would not have been out there in the midst of a lot of people raising their sights and looking at what happened in Nipsey Hussle and the way that people are just so trapped in looking at the way that things are and thinking that there's nothing that we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask, and maybe I could ask you at this point around this, and then we can go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But this point about this number five, the point of attention number five, we search for and fight for the truth no matter how unpopular, even as we listen to and learn from the observations, insights, and criticisms of others. And I think that's something that's actually really important for people to understand. It's actually something that's really important in the context of this overall thing that you're talking about and what people are trying to do.
Yeah, well, look, the points of attention as a whole, they're really a brilliant way in, as are those five stops. And they do pose the two choices, by the way, comes from Bob Avakian in the film, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Could Really Make a Revolution. They pose these questions because on the question of the truth, it's hard. It's the hard road. You know, you actually have to confront what is this killing for? Look at Nipsey. Here was somebody who wanted to actually something better. But his answer for that was a form of capitalism, black capitalism. Well, if should he have succeeded in what he was doing, he was on a certain road to do that, what was he going to do? What are those relations going to lead to? They're going to lead to the exploitation and oppression of more people, even as he might be able to help some people, including himself, for a while. But see, we really have to confront a system that's based on exploiting people here and around the world and exploiting the planet, despoiling the planet. This cannot lead to the kind of things that are concentrated in either the five stops actually stopping them or these six principles. And so when people take this up and they want to spread it because they want to live this way, one young man was saying to us yesterday about how hard he's trying to live by this now, how hard it is with his friends who just starting to view him as soft. But see, actually, this isn't soft. But to actually do this is actually a very hard thing. It means actually preparing for, as Michelle said, an actual revolution to overthrow the system, to go at things in a different way, to ultimately get to the point of defeating this system. Right now, we're in a process of organizing thousands of people into the movement for an actual revolution. We're going around the country for a year to do that. And this is the beginning of it here in Los Angeles. The search for the truth and fight for the truth is very important. Just one other example of where it's very sharply posed now in academia and in the colleges and among the youth, where the question becomes who's speaking becomes more important than whether or not they have an answer or solution. Now, certainly it matters to hear people from different sections of society, different parts of the world, different genders and all this. But the fact that by virtue of who's speaking, you have the truth, that isn't true.
Yeah, right.
You actually have to get down to, well, what is the what is their analysis? How do they describe the problem? And what is the solution? And will it solve it? If we simply got safe spaces for every group that feels some form of oppression from some other group, where would we be? Where would that end? Would we actually enable all of humanity to get free? Or would we once again be set against each other and never get to the root of the problem, which is this system, which is why we say you think you're woke, but you're sleepwalking through a nightmare that is actually potentially coming to a head, either with the environment, what's happening to immigrants and refugees around the world, and the great danger of war, which is once again increasing under the Trump-Pence regime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And Michelle, let's talk about this a little bit more with you about, you know, one, you know, just how radically new this thing is and how people are responding to it. You know, you've been out there for quite some time and really bringing this out to people. Let's talk about how new it is and how people are responding to it.
Yeah, I mean, I was sharing with someone that when I came forward, we didn't have the points of attention, right? And I had BA and talking about, you know, a lot of these, you know, what's concentrated in these points of attention around even the way that people relate to each other, right? And talk, like the way that people talk about each other, right? The, even like women calling each other the B word and, you know, and black people calling each other the N word and like, you know, and how they see the world and how they see even what Andy's speaking to, right? What is true? And people not actually looking for and searching for the truth and based on evidence, right? Not just based on who said it and what their identity is. And so this is, you know, even this point of attention number three that makes the point we fight for a world without borders and for equality among different peoples, cultures, and languages, right? And when you look at what Bernie Sanders is saying about the border, right, and what all these Democrats and all these people in power are saying about the border and talking about building fences and building walls and build, you know, and securing the border for the American people, right? And we're saying we're fighting for a world without borders, a community of human beings, right, where they can actually treat each other as full human beings and work together to advance society, you know. And I do just want to ask, who else is talking about that, right? And who else is actually going to work on actually overthrowing the system and actually talking about what is the problem? And so these points of attention are just really important because if you're somebody who, and we have been meeting a lot of people that are questioning a lot of things, right? What happened, you know, what happened in Nipsey Hussle? Why did it happen? Why does it happen? And it actually resonates with people that this is not the first time that this has happened is Nipsey Hussle, but this is a daily thing for people, going to funeral after funeral, burying their loved ones, seeing their loved ones go in and out of prison, you know, dealing with the police. This is a reality for so many people. And when they begin to lift their sights and look at and question, where is this coming from? And do we have to accept living this way? And here you bring these points of attention. And even for someone who is very new to this, can begin to, you know, to uphold them and learn about them and get them out at the same time as they're learning more about them, right? That's the example of, you know, the brother that I talked about earlier, right? That he's taking them out to people because he sees the importance of other people knowing about this at the same time as he's going on the website and checking out Baba Vegan and talking to us about more questions and getting more deeper into this because he actually does hunger for a different world.
Mm-hmm. Now, one more question, which is, I understand that there was also, you know, because people want to know, like, how people are responding to this, and I think you've been speaking very well to that, both of you, but there's also been, somebody mentioned to me that there's been some negative example, too, which I think it's, you know, because people want to know, they don't want to just hear sort of like, okay, well, what's going on with this right now, but actually, how's it unfolding? And so you've had some negative experience as well as positive experience?
Yeah. Just to return to the example that I talked about earlier is, I mean, people that are just so trapped in thinking that this is the only way and that we have to accept this and that we have to, you know, that we just have to live with this, right? And I just really want to return to this example of this guy who made the point about really appreciating what was in front of him with the points of attention and the need for a revolution. But just how he expressed it was, you know, my future is written. All of our future, you know, a lot of mm-hmm. these people here's futures are written because of, you know, because of what we represent, because, you know, and we're going to end up the same way that Nipsey ended up, you know.
You know, one of the things that happens in that we're at the beginning of a whole process of transforming the thinking of huge numbers of people, but people think according to how they've been taught to think. As much as people think they're self-made people and just their thoughts just appear out of nowhere in their head, these points of attention and these five stops are really brilliant, because this is not a utopian scheme. This is not some good ideas at which the reasonable person would say, well, that's all well and good. I agree with you there, Andy, but really, isn't it better to have some change than no change? Well, actually, the some change ends up being no change. And the thing is, these five things that we've in the five stops cannot be reformed under this system, yet people care deeply about it. But then there is these principles actually do correspond to a way society could be organized. And this is where Bob Avakian comes in, where he's developed an actual strategy where you could go from a situation today where the movement for revolution is very small, pitifully small in one sense. But in another sense, it's extremely powerful because we actually have the way out for people that resonates with people's aspirations and with the reality that they're living in. And there's a strategy for where we can bring forward the thousands that ultimately can lead millions in a changed and changing situation. And he's also written a constitution which deals with all the problems that most people haven't even anticipated that would come under a new society, but how that new society could stay on the road and get on the road to continue that revolution to emancipate all of humanity. This is really new stuff. It's a new communism. Very important for people to get into, because if there wasn't a way out, and there wasn't an actual better society, then this wouldn't make any sense. But the fact is, there's a basis for it in what people feel and in the contradictions, the problems that people can't solve, and in the solution. And that's what we're bringing to people, and that does resonate. But it's a struggle for people to change their thinking when they've been told what is all that could be.
Yeah, and it's extremely important. And actually, that sort of does figure into what I wanted to get into at the end, which was, again, this whole point about where to from here, which I think actually you could still speak to a little bit more, and we're running up on our time, but I really want people to hear what you're going to say about, and I don't know which one of you or both of you or whatever, but you guys pick.
Two-part harmony.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Michelle, why don't you start? You do 30 seconds, I'll do 30 seconds.
You can have a little bit more than 30 seconds.
Okay.
Huh? Okay, well, I just think, look, everybody that's listening to, you know, to our voices, you know, if you do hunger and for a better world, and you are, and you heard these points of attention, I read them, right? And fighting for a world where all the chains are broken, a world without borders, a world community of human beings that are actually working towards something much more different and liberating and, you know, emancipatory, then, you know, you don't have to step, you know, you don't have to jump in, you know, both feet, but, you know, but there is an actual need for, as I mentioned earlier, lots of people that need to know about this. Lots of people that are agonizing about the way that the world is and where the future of humanity is headed to. And we do have the answer. You know, I have a lot of certitude in saying that this is the only way that people are going to get free, is getting with this revolution, going to work on getting to the point when we can go all out and defeat these monstrous system to get to a whole different world.
Well, okay. So look, if you feel what Michelle just said, if you felt it when she read those points of attention, say, yeah, why can't we live like that in anything more than a tiny group of just a couple of people? Why can't we actually live like that? You need to listen to this show again at the archives and think about it. Is there something here? And if you answer that affirmatively, if you say, yes, there's something here, I want to know more about it, go to www.refcom.s and watch these films by Bob Avakian. You know, on your show, Michael, people hear that name a lot, Bob Avakian, BA, get into it. But if this resonated with you, you need to go there. We've been working on these problems. He's been developing a new communism, looking at that past experience and summing it up and then going for how could we actually change this world that's created so much unnecessary horror. And it's unnecessary because there's another way society could be. There's another way we could get out of it. And there's actually a strategy to do that. That's a big deal. You want to disagree with it? Disagree with it, but disagree with what's there or proffer a different solution that could actually end all of this. This is a big deal. Go to that website and get involved in the movement for an actual revolution, because the future really does depend on it. And that's the future that we are going for now. And you can't do this when things get so bad that people just want to rise up spontaneously. The world has seen all too much of that without the necessary, yes, leadership to be able to take that to a far better world.
All right. I want to thank both of you for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.
Right. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned.
Tales from the dark side, evidence of the settlements on my hard drive. Man, I swear my heart died at the end of that car ride. When I saw that checkpoint, welcome to apartheid. Soldiers wear military green at the checkpoint. Automatic guns, that's machine at the checkpoint. Tables not M16s at the checkpoint. Fingers on the trigger, you'll get leaned at the checkpoint. Little children, grown adults and teens at the checkpoint. All your papers better be clean at the checkpoint. Gotta put your finger on the screen at the checkpoint. And pray that red light turns green at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream of the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream of the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
Separation walls that surround in the checkpoint. On top is barbed wire like a crown on the checkpoint. Better have your permits if you found at the checkpoint. Gumming on the tower, aiming down at the checkpoint. Idea is to keep you in fear at the checkpoint. Enter through the cage in the rear of the checkpoint. Feels like prison on a tear at the checkpoint. I'd rather be anywhere but here at this checkpoint. Nelson Mandela wasn't blind to the checkpoint. He stood for free Palestine at a checkpoint. Support BDS, don't give a dime to the checkpoint. This is international crime at the checkpoint. Arabs get treated like dogs at the checkpoint. Cause discrimination is the law at the checkpoint. Criminalized without a cause at the checkpoint. I'm just telling you what I saw at the checkpoint.
All right, welcome back. That was Jasiri X with Checkpoint. Seemed very, very fitting for our next guest and our next conversation. You know, over the years, I've really come to know my next guest in spurts. It's kind of been spurts that I relish the chances I get to talk with her. Her name's Jen Marlowe. She's a U.S.-based journalist and award-winning author, documentary filmmaker, playwright. She's also the communications associate for Just Vision and co-producer of their film Nyla and the Uprising. Her books include The Hour of Sunlight, One Palestinian's Journey from Prisoner to Peacemaker, I Am Troy Davis, and Darfur Diaries, Stories of Survival. And you can follow her on Twitter or Instagram at donkeysaddle.org. Jen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael. Great to be back on.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have to do this. You know, we have to get the time a little bit closer in, you know, so we can...
I know. It's two big gaps in between all of our...
Yeah. Of our stuff. But I have to tell you, those big gaps, it's always when I get this, I scan my emails and I see your name and I open it up and there's always something that's actually, yo, we got to do this, man. So that's the payoff there. That's basically what, you know, and I think it's important that I just have to say this right off the bat, that the amount of heart and soul that you've put into bringing the truth about what's happening to people all over the world is extremely important in the world today.
Oh, so, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
It means a lot to hear you say that.
All right. So let's jump into the first question. The title,
yeah.
Running for the Right to Thrive. There's an intro in your piece on the Palestinian Marathon, which lays out pretty starkly the efforts of Trump and Netanyahu to disappear the Palestinian people. And in terms of an overview for people, let's talk about the reality of that.
Yeah, and just to be clear, that intro was written by the editor, Tom Engelhardt, who's the editor of Tom Dispatch. So that's not the intro that I wrote to the piece, but he did write it, and I think it's actually quite true. There's a lot of different ways to disappear a people, and there's, you know, there's physical ethnic cleansing at one end of the spectrum, but then there's also disappearing them from an agenda, disappearing them from view, disappearing them from being a source of concern, or disappearing them from who is considered to be humans whose lives have value. And I think in different ways, all of those things are happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you it's interesting because, yeah, you know, there's that intro from the publisher of this, but then there's also, you know, you have immediately, you pose a question for people, I think, that the people have to actually grapple with when you talk about this. You talk about, you went to the Palestinian Marathon and you saw it as a window of occupation and survival. in a less than holy land?
Yeah, I mean, in full disclosure, the editor actually came up with part of that title. Editors always...
Who is this editor?
but it's very true. That's what. So I ran the Palestine Marathon, and training for it and running it really were... And that's why I wanted to write this piece, is because I was really struck by what a unique and profound window that it did provide into the lives of Palestinians living under occupation, struggling to survive under that occupation, which is increasingly repressive, and deserving the right to thrive.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that also was new to me, when you said you did this in solidarity with the Right to Movement, what is that?
So Right to Movement is an organization that, if I understand the history correctly, they were founded in 2013, and they came into being as an umbrella in order to organize the first Palestine Marathon. So there was a group of folks, George Zeidan, who is a Palestinian originally from the Bethlehem area, and then two, I believe, Danish, I believe they're from Copenhagen, colleagues of his who were based in Palestine at the time. They formed the Right to Movement in order to launch the what became the annual Palestine Marathon, and that was in 2013. So Right to Movement now as an organization still exists. They focus mainly on looking at the right of freedom of movement in Palestine, but there's running clubs in other places, you know, using running and outdoor activity as a way to highlight people's what should be their inalienable right to freedom of movement. The Palestine Marathon is actually now organized by the Palestinian Olympic Committee, so it's no longer directly organized by Right to Movement. But those goals and the solidarity that I felt with Right to Movement and those goals were part of what motivated me to want to do the run.
Now, one of the things that's really just really grabs you when you're reading this article you did on this, you know, it's not just a sort of a sort of rote kind of repetition of everything that people know about. Well, you train for a marathon. There's this. But you really set the marathon within the overall what's going on in Palestine, and it was really, to me, and in all parts of it, in Gaza, in the West Bank, all of this, you actually set this in a very, very powerful way. You were able to you actually talked about being able to access places that people don't normally see in Palestine, in occupied Palestine, going places that Palestinians themselves are forbidden to go to. So let's talk about that. How did you do that, and why, and what did you find out?
Well, so, you know, in terms of my training, I didn't make the decision that I was going to run the marathon until I was actually en route to Palestine. I was visiting a friend in Copenhagen, and that's when I, on my way to Palestine, and that's when I learned that the marathon would be taking place while I was there, and that's when I decided, maybe this is something I should do. So what that meant is all my training had to happen while I was there in Palestine. And then because I only had about 6 or 7 weeks to train, wherever I was, you know, wherever I found myself for the work that I was doing, I needed to train there. So I was in Gaza for several weeks, which means a couple of my long training runs happened in Gaza. I was in Haifa visiting friends for several days. Wherever I was in the West Bank, I was in Jerusalem. So wherever I was, that's where I trained. But then again, that provided this really, I think, interesting and unique window into the different realities that Palestinians face, and you know, the issue of the access of movement. Some Palestinians are able to access all the places that I was, but what I mean by that is, you know, when I was in Gaza, running in Gaza, Palestinians who live in Gaza had the same access that I did to places in Gaza, but Palestinians who live in the West Bank or who live inside what is now Israel are not able to access Gaza. Same thing when I was running inside Jerusalem or inside Haifa, Palestinians from the West Bank and Palestinians from Gaza, their ability to access those lands are controlled by the Israeli military. They'd have to get a permit from the Israeli military, which is very difficult to procure. You know, so each of the places that the nature of the occupation is that Palestinians are cut off from each other and isolated from each other and segmented into these different geographic territories in which they can't travel and physically be with each other. And so that's part of what I was highlighting, that as a foreigner, as an international, I had more ability to access all of the parts of Palestine, where Palestinians only typically can access the part of Palestine that they were born in.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Jen Marlowe. And Jen's just a remarkable person, okay? There you go. She's a writer, documentary filmmaker, founder of Donkey Saddle Projects, communications associate for Just Vision, and co-producer of the film Nyla and the Uprising. And we're talking about the Palestine Marathon, which she recently ran in, and the running for the right to thrive, and what's the conditions of the, you know, the Palestinian people right now. And I want to dig into that in a minute. Now, Jen, one of the things that, you know, you do a lot to bring to people's knowledge, to bring people to the knowledge of what Palestine is actually like, including, I think, and this is really important, including something that people do not really get the impact of all this. You talk about the Israeli military, and that what's going on in Palestine today is a critical part of their genocidal plan, and it involves constant terrorization of the Palestinian people. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, most Palestinians live under an Israeli military occupation, and that essentially means dominance and control over another people. And so the way the occupation looks, the way that control plays out, is different depending on where people live. So the way it looks or the details of it and how it plays out, how the occupation plays out in the West Bank, has differences from how it plays out in Gaza, how it plays out in East Jerusalem. Palestinians who live inside what is now Israel no longer live under Israeli military occupation, but they do live in a state of being absolute second-class citizens. I mean, Israel, just their parliament recently passed the nation-state law, which essentially decrees that, you know, Israel is, among many other things, it demotes Arabic from being an official language to alongside Hebrew to a non-official language, very clearly sending a message. And Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said this quite overtly, that Israel is a Jewish state, not a state for all its citizens, because Palestinians inside Israel make up 20% of Israeli citizens. So it's very clear, I mean, and it's been explicitly stated by the Prime Minister and explicitly codified in this law, that they are second-class citizens. So Palestinians are either living in different forms of occupation in Gaza, the West Bank, or East Jerusalem, or they're living inside Israel as not even second-class citizens, but third or fourth-class citizens.
Mm-hmm. And one of the part of that actually is also expressed in the fact that settlers actually have the freedom to seize land of the Palestinian people no matter what. And there's a role that the Israeli settlers are actually playing in this whole program against the Palestinian people.
Absolutely. And violence from Israeli settlers is very much on the rise. Impunity, you know, very, very often met with impunity. The level, the number of attacks that there are on Palestinian people and Palestinian property from Israeli settlers, and the number of those attacks that then where there's any accountability on the part of those settlers, is very few. There are a few instances. There are occasional times where there is repercussions for their acts, but by and large, there is a great deal of impunity. And there's really good human rights organizations, both Palestinian human rights organizations and Israeli human rights organizations like Beit Selem, who I reference in the piece, who document pretty exhaustively settler violence.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, too, that you bring out is that you know, in particular, that for the things that people, you know, it actually always reminds me when Gaza first popped into the, you know, views of the world, the vision of the world in terms of what was happening to the people in Gaza and the absolutely unmistakable attempts or program to just annihilate these people. And you talk about some of what the conditions are in Gaza right now. And there were some things that really got to me when you were talking about this, just even the way, you know, how people survive or don't survive and they're stuffed into places, what they actually have to live on and with. Let's talk about that, because I don't think people really realize, even when we see and hear about the Palestinian people in Gaza standing up and actually standing up for their lives and, you know, a lot of people are just sort of like, oh, well, you know, look at it, you know, it's whatever. And people, even when they care, they don't get the full content of this, because the question again of genocide, a genocidal program, constantly asserts itself.
Yeah, and I just, you know, one thing I want to say is, you know, you use the word annihilate, you use the word genocide. Annihilation and genocide, I think, are complicated words. And for me, they're actually not very useful words, because then I think it tends to obfuscate actually what is happening, and it turns into a debate about whether, according to international law, what is happening can be considered genocide, yes or no. I think that's actually a word that ends up being used to almost obfuscate the actual situation, as opposed to being able to clarify the actual situation. And the actual situation, it's not a situation that I would actually say is annihilation. Annihilation would be, you know, Israel has the military capacity to go in and murder hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in a day. There's the military capacity to do that. They're not doing that. But what they are doing is extremely insidious, because it's controlling people's ability to live life. Controlling their ability to live any kind of life of dignity, and controlling their ability to have a future, plan for a future, have a future with hope, have a future with dignity. Israel controls who goes in and out of Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip has been under a state of siege and under blockade since 2007. Who goes in and out of the Gaza Strip, Israel controls. What gets in and out of the Gaza Strip, Israel controls. And very much, you know, with every several years, there's been a war, you know, that Israel has actually referred to, the Israeli military has referred to it as mowing the grass, you know, keeping people under control. And part of that is killing people, you know. Yeah, so whether it's through these wars that have happened every couple of years, whether it's through the Great March of Return, where Israeli soldiers and snipers are essentially picking off largely non-violent demonstrators, and every week, you know, it's this trickle again of one, two, three people killed each week at these protests, and it's really a program to make sure that people are thoroughly dominated. And why that is, I mean, there's lots of speculation that can happen. One speculation that I would offer is to try to squelch any resistance. And try to squelch Palestinians continuing to advocate for their rights.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I actually, and we will discuss this other disagreement here sometime, some point in the future, because I do think that what you're saying right now is extremely important in terms of what is being done to the Palestinian people. And people cannot forget that. I mean, Ilan Pappe even talks about it as incremental genocide. But I wanted to ask you this. You also had a piece in here that talks about the Jerusalem forest. And it was very moving when I read that. And I wanted you, you know, because I know I've talked to you for many years now about what's going on in Palestine, what's happening to the Palestinian people. And your heart is huge in relation to that, as well as many other things. But in relation to that in particular, this is something that it's set in your heart. And I wanted to talk about this article. You talked about the Jerusalem forest, and I wanted people to hear what you had to say about that.
I believe the incident you're talking about, so I was doing one of my, this was my longest training run, the longest run before the actual marathon. So I was trying to do this 20-mile training run in Jerusalem, and I started off the run. I was staying with friends who live in the Old City in Jerusalem, and I ended up running to the Jerusalem Forest, which is, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 miles away from the Old City. And my plan was just to, you know, run around all the paths in Jerusalem Forest for, you know, a bunch of miles and then run back to the Old City. And as I was running, I, you know, just following the different paths and, you know, several miles in, and I look up and I see in front of me, just high above me, these train tracks that just come to an abrupt stop with like a cutoff and a cattle car. On those train tracks. And I knew immediately what I was looking at. That's an iconic image of one of the outdoor exhibits of Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial Museum that's in Jerusalem. And I hadn't realized that I'd been to Yad Vashem. It's been several, many, many years, actually probably more than a decade since the last time I was there. But I hadn't realized that Yad Vashem was at the same place as the Jerusalem Forest, that the Jerusalem Forest abuts the property of the Holocaust Memorial Museum. And so unknowingly, I had run onto the grounds of the Holocaust Memorial Museum, and I was looking at and I was confronting with this exhibit, which was meant to memorialize, I think it's actually called Memorial to the Deportees, the Holocaust victims, millions of Holocaust victims who were loaded onto cattle cars and then trained to their death in a number of different death camps that were run by Nazi Germany. So looking at this, I immediately, it was a sort of a mixture of emotions that I was immediately confronted with. And one was, first of all, I felt shame, like here I had just been kind of jogging and training for this marathon, and I was in this, the spot that is meant to be marking this egregious, one of humankind's most egregious atrocities. And so I felt shame that I had just been jogging on this, these grounds. And then I also was just confronted with thinking about that reality of the human lives that perished in the Holocaust, and the human lives that had been herded into these cattle cars and brought to their murders. So I was confronted with all of that, and I also found myself feeling some anger. And the anger was because I remembered from when I had been in Yad Vashem 20 years ago, I remember that my guide had told us that if you look at the placement of this cattle car, and the placement of Yad Vashem itself, it's high up on this hill, and it overlooks, it's this beautiful view overlooking these sweeping hills of Jerusalem. And that view, the placement of the cattle car and the placement, I believe, of the museum was intentionally meant to stir up these Zionist sentiments and to stir up the idea, to stir up the emotional, an emotional welling that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, that Israel is the hope springing from the Holocaust, and that Jerusalem is, is an inalienable part of Israel. And that's a lot of emotional manipulation, right? It's taking this horrific tragedy of the Holocaust and the horrific tragedy of all of these perished lives, and it's trying to manipulate them to stoke justifications for settler colonialism. And that was it's a very intention, it's not accidental. It's very intentional, and which has a lot to do with propaganda of the state of Israel, is very deliberately, there's a very deliberate program to manipulate propaganda and to manipulate messaging in order to justify settler colonialism, in order to justify ongoing and increasing repression of the Palestinian people, in order to justify killing of unarmed civilians. So I felt that whole mixture of emotions at that moment when I was confronted with this cattle car.
Okay, Jen, and you produced something very important for people to read, and they can find that where?
It was published by Tom Dispatch, so tomdispatch.com, it's called the Palestine Marathon, Running for the Right to Thrive.
And you also have a website of your own?
I do. So donkeysaddle.org is my website for Donkey Saddle Projects, and then the organization that I also am a communications associate for, Just a Vision, their website is justvision.org.
All right, Jen Marlowe, thank you very much for joining us today, and I really look forward to talking to you again soon, okay? It's got to be sooner than every other year or something,
I look forward to that. I look forward to it happening more often.
All right, Jen, take care now.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Sure, bye.
Bye.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Jen Marlowe, writer, documentary filmmaker, founder of Donkey Saddle Projects, communications associate for Just Vision, and co-producer of their film, Nyla and the Uprising. And we were talking with her about the Palestinian Marathon, which she recently ran in, and running for the right to thrive and for the right to actually to live, basically. And I also want to thank my earlier guest, Michelle Chai from the Los Angeles Revolution Club, and Andy Z, spokesperson for Revolution Books New York City and co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and an advocate for the new communism developed by Bob Avakian. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. I also want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and my engineer for today, Teddy Robinson. And again, as I said, each and every one of you, both, let's go out now with a song that's going to be fitting for the entire day. And for a whole lot more, we're going out with Revolution by Savage Rose, all right?
It's reaching.